With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
So I think the question on everyone's lips is, why aren't you a real doctor?
Well, you're right. I agree with you there.
You're a medical doctor. All know, not a real doctor.
That's correct.
Yeah, so why?
Well, I'm trying to rectify that now.
I mean...
You know, then I'll be a Dr. Squared.
Yeah, but don't you think you're being greedy? Don't you think you're setting actually unrealistic standards for all of us who are finishing their PhDs and who have parents who are like, oh, you know, maybe you should do medical school and then you'll be a real doctor, even though that we are in fact real doctors right now.
Or who just have like no intention of doing a PhD or a medical degree.
Exactly. Yeah.
If on paper I look good, then just bear in mind that I have many personal shortcomings. So don't feel inadequate. Tell your parents that I'm actually just a bit of a dick. So.
Hello and welcome to Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet, the only podcast that uses cutting-edge science to answer the questions that you actually have. Things like, why is the sky blue, what's up with trees, and how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodcut chuck could in fact chuck wood? I got that wrong, but I don't care. On my left, I have Oz Ismail. Oz is a PhD student in neuroimaging and dementia, a Tinder aficionado, and is a compendium of awkward sexual advice.
Insert awkward silence here.
On my right, as always, I've got Suhail Patel. Suhail is an amazing journalist. He makes incredible videos for the BBC, and he's learning a lot more about science.
I don't answer.
Doesn't matter. And you know it, we know it, she's here. We've got Hannah Ayoub. Hannah is an amazing artist, a creative producer, and is the only person I know who is allergic to hypoallergenic dogs.
Hello.
I mean, how? That's what I want to know.
What is that?
It's a dog that people aren't meant to be allergic to, but I'm still allergic to them. No, they just don't tend to land me in A&E the way other dogs do.
That's pretty good.
And today we have an amazing guest.
You applause.
We've got the man, the myth, the cardiologist, Dr. Rohin Francis.
Good evening.
How are you today, man?
I'm good. Yeah. How's everybody else?
Can I just say, you have quite the radio voice.
I've got a sore throat, so this is well-timed.
Okay, I mean,
good
impressive.
Evening.
So I'm incredibly glad to get Rowan on because, Rowan, you're a Cambridge-trained cardiologist, right?
Yeah.
So that means out of, like, five people in the room, there are now two people who can walk into any job, isn't it, like, Hannah?
Still don't have, like, English names, though.
There we go, yeah.
So yeah, my undergrad was London, mm-hmm. George's. Mm-hmm. All my cardiology training's been in Cambridge.
Wow, damn, that you're just, oh, I hate you. You're everything my parents want me to be. I really hate you.
I mean, I just hate you.
I'm feeling a lot of love here. Yeah.
No, look, I'm coming in really strong because Rohin, apart from being an incredible cardiologist trained person and a PhD researcher,
yeah,
right, he's also someone who, upon first meeting him, all right, I was at a comedy night.
This is going.
Yeah, and he goes to me, oh, hey, Alex, I heard about your podcast. Yeah, I gave it a listen. I was like, oh, shit, really? I was like, oh. He's like, yeah. Needs work.
I think you're misrepresenting
me. No.
It's true, though.
And nothing's changed.
No. I'm just saying, you did that, right? And then I had to MC you onto a stage while you were doing a comedy set. You don't neg the guy MCing you.
That is also true.
Like, you dealt with it very diplomatically.
Yeah, I brought up to the fact that, yo, this guy started negging me. Why? What did I do wrong?
Wait, did that make you sad, Alex?
Yeah, it did, like a little bit in my soul, because I was expecting praise.
I was trying to be constructive with my criticism.
I mean, he also did tell me that the correct way to talk about collecting organs was not harvesting.
We'll get into that. But Rohin, we've talked around you. Can you perhaps, in the best words possible, I don't know, explain what it is you do, who you are, and just why you have such an amazing radio voice?
Yep, thanks very much for inviting me along. I'm very excited to be here. As you said, I'm a cardiologist. So I've been working in the NHS full time for quite a few years, and I've come out to do a PhD kind of at the end of my training, which I'm doing in London in UCL. It's going slowly. It's giving me a lot of time for YouTube and Twitter. And meeting people like you, but hopefully that the work will ramp up soon. And then I've got 2 more years to go with the PhD.
You mean correcting people like you?
I'm
correcting you there.
Pedantry is a major part of my raison d'être. Okay.
Je ne parle pas français. What's a raison d'être?
Je ne parle pas français. It wouldn't be the infinitive there.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, fromage.
Wow. I'm kidding.
Wow. Yeah, je m'appelle.
This is the Rohin show now.
Now Alex is gone.
I had to take it there. Where were we?
Don't feel bad, because Alex gives out a lot too, man.
So... Oh, so I see what this is. As soon as...
This is a coup.
Yeah.
We're taking over, motherfucker.
As soon as someone vaguely sexy comes on, it's all like, mutiny. All right, he's going to leave.
I've been on the whole time.
I have never been described as vaguely sexy. Okay, Alex. Your standards are very low.
You still have the sexiest voice on this podcast, right? Okay.
I really appreciate that. But so, Rohin, what is your PhD in? Because how do you go from doing cardiology to jumping into a PhD? And like, what do you find interesting?
Well, a lot of cardiologists actually end up doing a research degree, either an MD or a PhD these days. And my PhD is quite clinical. So I'm still seeing patients. I'm still sort of doing regular doctor work. And the actual subject is I'm using advanced imaging techniques. So that's PET.
I do imaging.
Yeah, I know.
Amazing.
You do.
How can we?
Such a small world. So I use PET, positron emission tomography, and MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, to image patients who've had heart attacks and use new ways to look at heart disease.
So what does that actually give us?
Pretty much nothing at the moment.
So just as I suspected, doctors are pretty useless.
Not all of them, but this one, yes.
So Oz, what have you seen in the news this week?
So this was actually a story that was kind of interesting and also quite dark.
You had me at interesting.
And then I lost you at dark. Right, so this is a story, actually new story from the States about the authorities using a dead man's fingerprints. Did you hear about this? So basically, this thing happened in Florida where the police stopped a 30-year-old black man after he was driving in a car with tinted windows, and that's not illegal in the state of Florida, right? So they stopped him, and then they started searching him, and then I think he had drugs on him, or they say he had drugs on him, and so he tried to get away.
He didn't have drugs on him.
Well, the reports say that he had some drugs on him, but he had no...
I don't believe it.
What kind of drugs?
I'm not sure. Basically, he tried to get away, and they decided to shoot him 4 times.
Fuck.
Right? He died, obviously. And so, obviously, the family devastated. They want to know why it was necessary to kill him when he didn't have a weapon on him. Anyway... Whilst family were arranging his funeral, the FBI turn up and they demand to see his body to use his fingerprint on his phone so they can unlock his phone to carry out an investigation. They don't ask the family if they can do this. They just go ahead and do it, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought about this, and so, like, it's a horrendous story, and it's as if it wasn't traumatizing enough for the family. Suddenly, they're using this dead man's body to invade his privacy, right? But turns out, legally, that's fine. Apparently, once you're dead, privacy laws don't apply.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's the same in the UK. The Data Protection Act stops when you die.
You're dead, man.
So, literally, like, and also this means that any information, so say, like, in your phone, like, you have WhatsApp messages from different people, all of that information, doesn't matter if you're alive, you've sent it to that person, they can access it and they can do whatever they want. But isn't that insane?
Does this apply to, like, other people getting access to your data, like, not just the authorities?
That's a good question. I don't know, but I think the authorities don't need a search warrant. They can just go in. And so this is what they were trying to do. Mm. Now, they were unsuccessful in unlocking his phone using his fingerprints. So they had to, like, use other technology.
Yeah.
But also, the article I was reading was talking about whether you can use your fingerprints once you're dead. And turns out you can't really, because fingerprint technology works in... At the moment, there's three different ways it works, right? There's the optical method, which literally takes a picture of the ridges and the valleys of your fingerprints. And that's pretty outdated, because anybody can make an image of your fingerprint or a prosthetic and use it to unlock something. Mm. So the current technology that most devices use uses these capacitators. And this, the way this works, is it uses charge.
Is a capacitator different to a capacitor?
Or
on this podcast,
it's the flux capacitator.
Look, on this podcast, we don't shame people for not being able to pronounce
it. That was actually an honest question. I promise you, that was. Don't give me that look.
I'm literally dyslexic, bro.
Look at him coming here with his fancy schmancy Cambridge, London-y degrees, double doctoring. I see you.
Still not a real doctor, though. So, as I was saying. Capacitors. So the way they work is, so you press your finger against the sensor and the different ridges will create a charge from your finger, and where there's a valley, so where there's no ridge, there's air, so there won't be a charge, so it creates a profile of electrical charge. Well, and basically it's an electrical signal, and that's what most current phones and tablets use. And then, like, the future of fingerprint technology is ultrasound technology, where there's a transmitter and a receiver. So you press your finger against it, there's a transmitter that sends an ultrasound, and then depending on where it hits the ridge or the valley, it creates a profile of your fingerprint, and then that's how it's going to work in the future.
Mm.
Anyway, basically, because the current version uses electrical capacitors. Did I say it right? Cambridge.
Please continue.
Okay. So it turns out this technology doesn't work when you die, but no one has actually investigated how soon after you die it stops working. Like, how soon after you die can you stop getting
electrical
charge?
Should we test it right now?
I mean, you'd need all our phones and kill four of us.
Listen,
we just kill one. Just repeatedly lock and unlock.
This proves.
That's the scientific method.
No. An N of one is not the scientific method, okay? I have tried to publish an N of one. It has not gone well.
I understand, yes. Although I think on this particular occasion, a small sample size may be forgiven, because I think you'd have trouble getting it past the ethics committee anyway. But retrospectively, we could probably pass one.
I mean, it's interesting you talk about ethics, because, like, that does raise a lot of questions about these, like, authorities doing...
I'm surprised. I didn't know that about the data protection laws. I've not heard of that. So that is surprising.
I mean, this is the thing. This article raises the question, like, it's legal, but, like, what about the ethical side of things? Like, how is it...
Well, like, you're surely... dead, innit? So...
Yeah, but surely your family should have a say in...
Fuck them.
You should have the right to be remembered in a certain way and not have all your data.
But do you think the fact that this was a murder, a police case, they'd shot him, changed the fact so that there was like they could get a warrant to look in his phone and use his fingerprint?
I think the whole point of the story was that they didn't need a warrant for it.
Yeah. So basically, the FBI just marched into the funeral home and demanded to see his body.
So that seems very strange.
A funeral home? Like,
he was in the casket, man.
His
son was giving the eulogy. With, like, tears in his eyes.
Like in middle of the wake, he just brings the phone out, gets his thumb. It's like, yeah, I need to see those group chats.
Yeah. See what you're doing.
Okay, quick question, though. When you're in a group chat, and again, because I'm really popular and everyone loves me, I've never been removed from a group chat. Do you lose the ability?
I remove myself quite often.
Do you lose the ability to see past messages?
No. So I've just removed myself from my old work chat, a group chat, and I can still see old messages.
Yeah. Fuck. But then you've got to delete the group. You've got to leave and then you've got to delete.
Yeah. So basically it's not enough for us, to, if anyone dies, to remove them from the group chat.
Listen, you don't worry about it.
Well, so this is a more medical context, but... one of the medical indemnity organizations, you know, who help doctors who are have some sort of misconduct charge or something, they had a case study that they sent us of, I think there were two cases. One was a doctor who was in a group chat where some pornography, like pretty messed up stuff, was being circulated, not, you know, there were probably animals involved and stuff. And but the doctor, or maybe it was two doctors, they weren't participating, but they were just in the chat. And they got in trouble for doing that with the General Medical Council. And then the other one was a group chat which talked about drug taking. And one of the people in the group was arrested, and they looked through the group, and just because the doctor was in the group, the doctor then again got a reprimand, even though they hadn't been, involved.
Yeah, but isn't it so? Like in our previous episode, Keris mentioned that, you know, if there's illegal content that you come across on the internet, it doesn't matter if you stumbled upon it. If you've seen it, you've basically broken the law because it's illegal.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I mean, it's quite hard to stumble upon messed up stuff, right?
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, in this case, if someone sent it to your group chat and you happen to be in there...
Ollie?
Ozzy? Do you know who I am?
What are you hiding?
I'm not...
Ozzy, what have you done?
I don't think I'm the one hiding anything here, considering you call me Ollie. Like...
Ollie,
why is this turned into the last act of Poirot and everyone's just like pointing fingers at one another?
Stop it, all you guys.
Anyway.
Are you okay there, Hannah?
Hannah's just dying right now.
Quick, get her phone. Let's test her fingerprint.
We need to see if it's true.
Sorry.
It's too hot.
Tears coming down their face. Tears. So back to the people being
reprimanded.
Reprimanded for just being in a group chat. That's fucked up.
That is fucked up.
It's majorly fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously this is a medical profession, but I'm sure it applies to other. In fact, I think a lot of private enterprise banks and stuff monitor their employees very closely. So I think people have to be aware of these kind of things these days. And if you've got a friend who sends some fucked up stuff to your WhatsApp group, have a word and say, look, stop it now.
Each of you individually, how would you feel if after you died, your phone, your computer, like all your electronic data was accessible by people who are in power, like law enforcement and stuff? Like Hannah, how would you feel?
I don't like it. Like, I really don't like it. But I think the thing that would make it worse is whether that data can be passed on. Mm. Like, whether it's only accessible by the authorities for a, like, particular investigation.
Yeah. Obviously, if you're...
But that implies that you trust the investigating authorities to keep it safe.
I trust them slightly more than, like, the general public at large. Mm. Slightly.
Slightly, yeah.
But it's like, if someone killed me, I'll be like, motherfuckers, find that guy. Like, do what you gotta do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, check my shit.
Well, the police killed this dude. They know who killed
him. This is the police, fuck.
I mean, what are you wearing? How do you feel?
I'm not keen on the idea. I mean, like, by one token, I'm dead, so I don't really care. But, and I've got nothing particularly very exciting on my laptop, except spreadsheets.
I'm very opposed to the idea, and I think you know, these phone companies like Apple was in the media a couple of years ago by refusing to create a backdoor, and I certainly supported that. I think you know, they were in the right. Obviously, the FBI found one anyway, but yeah, I this is all a surprise. I didn't know that they could do all that. So.
So we had some questions for you. The first one was inspired by, so my dad had heart surgery a few years ago. He had to have multiple bypass. And before he went into surgery, the surgeon sort of, taking all this far too lightly, sort of went, you know, when we're going to crack open your chest, we used to call that death. We're going to stop your heart, we used to call that death. And we're going to puncture your aorta, we used to call that death. So I wanted to ask, what sort of what do you think of that? Because I can tell from your face that you don't seem to like it.
No, I think that's... not the best bedside manner, let's put it that way.
I should point out my dad's a former nurse, so he actually absolutely loved that.
Well, perhaps then the doctor was being appropriate for the, you know, for the patient.
But what do you sort of, which bits of sort of modern cardiology do you think are almost sort of science fiction, like that we once didn't think we'd get to?
Well, that's a tough question. So I think bypasses are becoming... fewer and fewer. We're doing them much less frequently. There's still a subset of patients who do better out of an open heart, open chest surgery with a bypass. But the most common medical procedure in the world now is coronary angioplasty. So that's a stent. Mm-hmm. Most people know it as that. And
can you tell us what a stent is?
Yeah, so a stent is where you put a little metal tube, a bit like the tube in the inside of your biro, that little spring. It's about that size, but much, much thinner metal. And it goes over a balloon, and you put it in nowadays through the wrist. So you just make a tiny puncture in the radial artery in the wrist. And everything goes up there. You pass tubes up to the heart from the wrist. And then you put the stent in, blow it up with the balloon, and it opens up the artery. So that's become an extremely common procedure. I think we take it a bit for granted now, but it's not, I wouldn't call it science fiction, but the reason I mention that is that now we are putting valves in via the same technique, not from the wrist, but from the leg, where the artery is a bit bigger. So whereas previously we would have cracked the chest and which used to be called death, and taken out, say, a diseased aortic valve, we're now putting that valve in without opening the chest at all. We're putting it in from the leg, and that's something called a transcatheter aortic valve implantation, or a TAVI. And I think that's going to explode. I think in about 10 to 15...
That's very reassuring.
Hopefully not literally.
Listen.
Yeah, not the best.
I think that's going to take off.
No, that's science fiction. And the real stuff.
Yeah, so...
Can you imagine...
Putting something in your leg and it getting up to your heart is science fiction.
No, but just think about it. Think about it. Like, Rohan sat next to you. You're under, right? And he's feeding it in. It's like he's building a ship.
Already I'm uncomfortable.
Ship. Yeah, like, it's like ship in a bottle.
That's a good analogy.
Feeding that in.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
And then, and then you get up and you get out and it's really great and you feel like you've got a new lease on life. 3 days later, your heart explodes.
It's like, you dead, motherfucker.
I've got a few case reports of exploding hearts, actually.
I was just fucking around, really.
Listen. Yeah, I mean, they're not...
I think he's talking about his romantic conquests.
That's broken hearts. There are occasional case reports that you see of exploding hearts. They're not... It's nothing to joke about. They're like... People die. But... and they're what we call iatrogenic, so they're caused by a medical cock-up. For example, when we inject dye down one of these tubes, we normally do it by hand, but sometimes you use a power injector, which is like just a machine that injects a big volume of dye very quickly. And there have been a couple of cases where that's been put in the wrong place and power injector has been used and someone's heart or their heart arteries have literally exploded.
Fucking hell. Mm-hmm. Shit, bruv.
So, like, as these things sort of happen, you say, like, you know, these incredibly bad cases have happened, do we learn a lot from them? And does it make medicine and sort of these almost sci-fi medical techniques better? Like, are we learning? Are we getting a lot better? Are we moving leaps and bounds? Or is it just like trundling ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I'm biased here, but I think cardiology has changed more than pretty much, well, let's say, you know, it's amongst the most rapidly changing areas of medicine. We've made huge progress. So that stenting for a heart attack that I was mentioning, 20 years ago, or 25 years ago, we'd put patients in bed to have a heart attack, give them a cup of tea, and you know, there wasn't much else you could do. And now, the death rate has plummeted from big heart attacks. And that's because of excellent ambulance service, paramedics, better GPs with primary prevention, as well as these stenting techniques that, you know, that's further down the line.
So we talked about hearts and everything you can do to hearts, but just how bad is heart disease or is cardiovascular disease?
So most of the stats you can find are for cardiovascular disease as a whole, which includes things like stroke as well as coronary heart disease, so like heart attacks. It's the leading cause of death and disability in the world, and causes about a third of deaths every year globally. In the UK, it's closer to a quarter of deaths, which is still, you know, really, really high. Over 150,000 deaths each year, an average of 420 people each day, or one death every 3 minutes. But it's not all sort of really dooming.
It's job security.
it's job security for cardiologists, but also that death rate is falling. So since 1961, it's fallen by three quarters. So cardiologists seem, you know, whilst keeping themselves in jobs, seem to be doing quite a good job.
Yeah, but the interesting thing about heart, like, you know, you're saying cardiac heart disease is often linked to other things, isn't it? Like obesity and, you know, lifestyle and stuff. So
yeah,
you know, that is a big factor in it. So maybe tackling those issues isn't a good way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Hannah, very graciously credited cardiologist, but it's, you know, we're just one element, and it's public health, you know, community health, medications, lots of factors have gone into that. But it's been a huge success story of the last 50 years in medicine, is reducing the amount of people dying young. However, that has meant that we've got far more people living with heart failure. Mm-hmm. So where those people who previously would have died are now living with impaired hearts. So that's a huge growing area of people whose hearts aren't working properly.
I'm super interested in this. Super. Now, but you know, I was saying before, like, you know, I did the story about this lady called Selwa Hussain, who's the first grown woman to leave hospital with artificial heart. She's still got one. She's waiting for a transplant. So she has this machine, and this is like literally proper sci-fi. She wears a rucksack with a heart in it. You can literally hear it, like,
what? Boo, 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 wow. Boo,
yeah. Boo, boo.
And it's like super, like, weird, because like there's this lady who's.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
essentially hasn't got a heart, but she was like one of the most loud, like opinionated ladies I've ever met. I was like, damn.
Hang on, so crazy. Like, she had to wear this rucksack all the time?
Yeah, and she had to, like,
in bed and everything.
What she had to do was she had to come
she's
up.
She's got no heart, man.
She's got no heart. She had to, like.
What do you think?
Literally,
she's
had
the Tin Man. Is the Tin Man or is the lion? Dude, it's a lion, isn't it?
It's totally crazy.
No, the Tin Man was the one who had no heart.
Sorry, this is real life.
dude, I met her at a cafe. She had, when I came in, she was like, "Yo, is there plug socket around it?" I was like, "Why?" She's like, "I got a plug in my heart." I was like, "Fucking hell, son."
I think your iPhone gives you problems.
I know that. I was like, shit. I was like, damn.
So how does one of those work?
Yeah, so this answers your question about sci-fi stuff. Mm. So I think this is the most sci-fi area, which is what to do when everything else has failed. Mm. and hearts are really, really impaired, and that level of heart failure is a horrible disease to have. It affects every part of the body. And I was very lucky to do the heart transplant job up in Papworth Hospital in Cambridge. And so we had the first patient in the UK to have a total artificial heart. And there are two types of what are referred to as artificial heart. One is something called a ventricular assist device, which is not a replacement for the heart, but that's something that is plumbed in alongside the heart. And nowadays, they're extremely clever. They're tiny little pumps which have an impeller inside. So that's basically a propeller within a chamber. And they just have a single moving part. They're magnetically levitated. And this provides a lot of the flow. And in some cases, all the flow. We've had patients whose hearts have completely stopped and they've been surviving with these assist devices. And the interesting thing about these patients is when you meet them, they have no pulse. If you feel their pulse, they have no pulse because they've got constant flow, not pulsatile flow. Mm. So this is something we trick the junior doctors on the ward.
That's insane.
Wait, sorry. You go up to, you take junior doctors in, make them take these patients' pulse.
Yeah. And medical students probably, yeah.
Yo, you guys are the fucking worst.
No, the patients love it. They're in on the joke. The patients find it hilarious. So that's pretty common, and that's increasing. Now, in the UK, we're only really doing that, except a few cases, with a view to then getting a transplant. So that buys time for a transplant. Transplant is still the best treatment. Mm-hmm. Whereas in America...
What's the downside of an artificial heart?
Oh, lots.
First of all, you've got to carry a rucksack all the time.
Yeah. So that's the other type of artificial heart, which is a complete replacement. You take the heart out, the native heart, and you put in an artificial heart. And that is the thing that you source a hell, which is very noisy, and it's pulsatile. So you get this kind of sound. Mm. And that's a big backpack. The ventricular assist device is much smaller. It's kind of like a fanny pack. And but there are many downsides to both of these. Number one, patients need to have their blood thinned. They need to be on anticoagulation, so they're much prone to bleeding. Anytime you've got tubes are, you know, coming out of the body, so you can get infections, and they can be catastrophic. Those are the kind of main issues, but there are lots of problems that come with these. Mm-hmm. And you just can't replace the heart yet with technology. So transplant is the best treatment, but as everyone's aware, organ donors are in very short supply.
Mm. And I think, like, you know, one of the things that we've been doing is that Why Not a Donor campaign.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because we really think that it's massively important that people of color give blood and organs and stuff. And I found it particularly scary to know that, like, we have to spend a lot more time on sort of organ donor waiting lists and stuff. So when it comes to things like heart disease, are people of certain ethnicities more prone to sort of heart disease, heart or cardiovascular diseases?
They very much so. Yeah. We talk about risk factors for cardiovascular disease. Some are modifiable, so smoking, blood pressure, diabetes, like control of your diabetes, high blood pressure. These are things you can change by things you can do, taking medication or changing your lifestyle. And some things you can't control. You've got to choose your parents carefully.
I fucked up on that one.
so family history. And there is now, you know, a lot of people talk about being Asian as another risk factor. And South Asians have a very high
comparatively much higher rate of heart disease.
Oh, guys, wow. I feel really, I mean...
Afro-Caribbeans aren't scot-free here.
Listen, they just need to keep working on an artificial heart and I'll be all right.
So you have a YouTube channel, don't you, Rohan?
I do. It's a nascent YouTube channel. It's not that old. I've only got a few videos up there, but it's trying to communicate some interesting, offbeat medical sciencey ideas stuff. And my general mission statement is these are topics you won't find anywhere else on YouTube.
And what's it called?
It's called Medlife Crisis.
So you type Medlife Crisis on YouTube and you can find all his medical knowledge in 4 videos. That's about right?
Yeah, at most.
At most, yeah. At minimum and most.
A lot of it's duplication.
Brilliant.
So lots of animals in the animal kingdom can regrow parts of their bodies. So lots of people know about lizard tails being cut off and regrowing. The zebrafish in particular seems to be really good at regrowing its heart tissue. So it can be quite severely damaged and it's sort of the cells in the region sort of turn into stem cells, and some really interesting research going on there.
That is really interesting.
Yeah, so zebrafish hearts are a very popular model for people studying human heart disease because although it's a two-chambered heart, unlike the human four-chambered heart, it's morphologically not that dissimilar. It's got a ventricle, it's got an atrium, and I think it's something like 30% of the ventricle can be lost and regenerate, whereas human hearts can't regenerate at all. The human heart has four chambers, two ventricles and two atria, left and right sides, so left ventricle, left atrium, and vice versa. And the atria is the kind of they're the top chambers of the heart, so they receive blood from either the whole body on the right side or from the lungs on the left side, and then the blood then passes into the ventricles, and the ventricles do the more heavy lifting. They pump either to the lungs in the case of the right ventricle or all around the body in the case of the left ventricle.
So you see in the clinic, you see patients and then you do research as well, but most of your research is clinical, right?
Yeah.
And then there's research that happens in zebrafish and like mice and all these model organisms. Do you find that research is directly translatable? Like in the cardiology world, how much skepticism is there in terms of that research being translatable to humans?
Well, no, I don't think there's too much skepticism. The majority of cardiovascular research is basic science and translational. So, cell studies and animal models. And the team that I'm part of, although I do more clinical stuff, they're mostly all lab-based and use rat models and Langendorf hearts, which are rat hearts that have been taken out and continue to pump on a little rig. And so then you can infuse drugs and test things. So yeah, that's absolutely the basis of most cardiovascular research.
So you're talking about sort of the translation from animal models to sort of applying in humans. I know that, Hannah, you've been looking into weird animal hearts.
I have, and I know this is something that you've been looking at recently as well. But just quickly, because it's related, when we're talking about research, so I've been looking at animals that are quite distantly related to us, but within mammals, are our hearts quite similar?
The mammalian heart essentially is pretty similar across the entire range of mammals, apart from obviously size. But all mammals have got a four-chambered heart, and it all works in the same works in pretty much the same ways. But mammals within that have massive extremes. So the biggest heart ever is the blue whale heart. So again, morphologically, it looks like a human heart, but it's just shy of 200 kilograms, whereas our hearts are about 300 grams. And then the Etruscan shrew has the smallest heart, which weighs, I think from memory, 20 milligrams. So there are wild extremes, but yeah, they all pretty much work the same way. And that's important because xenotransplantation is a big area of research.
What is that?
And that's transplanting between species. It's been attempted before. There are some famous disasters of surgeons transplanting chimpanzee or baboon hearts into humans in the past. But, and so, you know, it kind of went underground because it got a very bad press. But
listen, what, I want to know what happened. That's fucked up, man.
Yeah, you make it sound like you could go down the back street.
Yeah, on the dark web.
Yeah, go on the dark web, the Melanin Network. You could just sort of go somewhere in East Ham, down some back streets, and then there's a guy with a pig heart. It's like, yeah, do you want it?
Yeah, I guess.
If it's East Ham, it's probably a monkey heart.
Why you got East Ham is fine.
East Ham is had like a very well cut up and coming.
So I went to a talk for the 50th anniversary of heart transplantation, which was a few months ago, and an expert in xenotransplantation was saying that by 2021, we'll maybe actually sooner than that, we'll transplant a kidney, a transgenic baboon or chimpanzee kidney. I'm sorry, I can't remember which species exactly. And then soon afterwards, we'll be transplanting other organs.
So when you say a transgenic kidney, what do you mean?
So these are primates who have had, I'm going to fall down on the details here, but they've had some sort of genetic editing. I don't know if that's...
So that they become compatible
so
with humans.
So they're... Okay. they're major histocompatibility complexes, or HLA for humans, I guess, more.
What's the...
Okay, so,
yeah, go on.
Sorry.
No, you first.
So the idea is that you can put it in a human and it's not going to... The human body's not going to reject this foreign kidney, basically.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with transplantation is rejection. So,
right.
So...
we all have that problem from time to time.
Set me up
for
that.
We all hire ourselves.
You can always take anti-rejection drugs, you know.
Can you get those?
So basically, how do we not get rejected on Tinder is my next question.
No, but you know, that's a good thing. I mean, a question I wanted to ask based on that, because obviously we talked about quite nonchalantly, like, you know, breeding monkeys and, you know, testing on rats and stuff. There's a moral question around that and an ethical question of, like, you know, because to give another human life, then you have to raise a monkey or ape, which is an intelligent animal, you might argue, and then kill that to...
But, yeah, but do you eat meat?
I do eat meat, but obviously, again, there's an ethical question there, isn't there, as well?
But you seem to have got over it, though.
It's true. It's true.
I mean, I eat meat too. I'm not judging here. I'm just... I had a conversation.
Aren't you? Your tone would...
But there is stuff. No, you're right.
That's,
you know,
that's just how I talk.
It's a good... Obviously, it's a good point you're making in that, you know, we do kill animals for human benefit, but it's like in the context, because it seems a bit different, like in this situation. That
yeah, it's
at
more
least
important,
psychologically.
Right?
So, yeah.
It's funny. I had this conversation very recently with someone, and they were saying, you know, they think it's unethical, but I think the argument to sacrifice an animal life to save a human life is much stronger argument than sacrificing an animal life just to eat it.
Yeah, don't you? No, that's so good. That's a good point. I agree.
And there are some arguments that, for example, pigs or even squid are just as intelligent as some primates.
Mm.
And
yeah,
a lot more
octopus,
people,
very clever, right?
Mm. And I think people will eat a lot of animals without thinking twice, but then suddenly have an issue when it's about saving lives.
Mm. I've got to say, I've stopped eating octopus.
Yeah, I've had to stop as well.
Because
I just can't cope
with it. I've
seen
a bunch of documentaries on octopodes.
Yeah. Mm. It's octopuses.
No, you can choose, actually.
Cambridge! Yes!
Pow, pow, pow!
The zoologist versus the cardiologist.
Well, no, but...
it's getting spicy!
This is nothing to do with... This is a classics here. This is etymology, right? So, the octopus is
pie. What's the plural of that?
No, that's completely wrong, Oz.
I think you're fine.
Oz, be quiet.
octopuses is probably the most accepted and correct, because once a word enters the English language, it becomes an English word. And hence, then you pluralize it as you would an English word.
So by that logic, I could make up words and if they enter the English language. I've made up lots of words.
As long as you pluralize them in an English way, that's fine.
It also has to enter common usage, not just you, Oz.
And so octopi is a misconception because it ends with us, that it's Latin. But of course, octo
okay, now
is,
we're talking languages, Alex. What's happened?
Octo is Greek. Hence...
Alex, shut it down. Alex, shut it down.
It could be pluralized.
Alex, shut it down. Like
in the Greek...
So,
manner.
So,
octopodes. I like it.
Alex, shut it down. Alex!
Merriam-Webster backs me up on this.
Yeah.
To summarize, Rohan's going with like classics and I'm going with the people.
I can live with that. Look, it started off as a light science podcast featuring ethnic minority people, and somehow it's become fucking university challenge. Did I ask for this? No. I just thought I'm going to bring together some people that I like and who are really smart and who are funny. But no, the ego's got in the way. We got two big people. And now...
I'm concerned though. I'm coming across like a bit of a dickhead. That would probably be a fairly realistic depiction.
We're all dickheads. It's all good.
No, but okay. Away from... etymology and back to weird hearts,
octopuses.
Octopuses, just go with octopuses.
Octopus, yeah, baby.
And squids and stuff. They're all one family, like cephalopods. That's
cephalopods.
It. I've only seen it written. It's cephalopods. So do they?
I agree.
I'm glad we agree on something.
This is compromise, folks.
So do cephalopods have weird hearts, Hannah?
They have three.
Yeah.
No way.
Wait, so Doctor Who has two, right?
Yeah.
Doctor Who has two hearts.
Galifreyan physiology.
Oz got a popular culture reference?
No, Oz got it wrong.
Look, yeah, I'm the cool one here. I'm not a nerd like the rest of you.
That's true.
Yes, when I look at you, I do think cool.
Round two.
Do you want to take this outside and have a cool...
Have you noticed Oz is extremely photogenic? Have you noticed this?
We can't unnotice it.
And I always think, wow, this guy's really good looking.
The best ones are the creep shots when Oz doesn't know.
He knows. He always knows.
Listen, I learned from the best. His name is Alex Lathbridge.
I've been training Oz in how to know where a camera is all the time.
I wish that was not true, but it's true.
It's like Oz, 45 degrees. So cephalopods have three hearts. Why do they have three hearts? Do they need that many hearts? Are they being selfish?
Are they being shellfish?
Ba-dum-bum.
Dad joke extraordinaire.
I mean, it was just bound to happen. It's got bound to be a dad joke.
It was an easy setup.
Just answer the fucking question.
They have a systemic heart and two branchial hearts, which supply their gills. Now, I'm certainly not a cephalopod expert here, so I don't want to speak out of turn.
There's
two hearts that basically pump blood through the gills so that the blood can get oxygen. And then it goes to the central heart, which then pumps that oxygen-rich blood around the body.
Interesting fact, that's why it's hard for them on Valentine's Day, because there are many hearts get broken.
That's sad. I feel sad now. Yeah.
The comedic tone just keeps dropping.
I have one more interesting fact about octopus blood, because it's blue. Unlike us, who use... hemoglobin, so iron at the center of heme to transport oxygen, they use copper, hence their blood is blue instead of red.
So we've mentioned already that like humans have four chambers and fish have two. The frogs have three chambers.
Okay.
Grasping your chest, Alex?
So I know that four chambers, they all serve like a purpose, and I get how it works, sort of like a cute pattern. Three chambers, how the fuck does that work?
It's a bit like in Only Fools and Horses, there's the three, like, a couple of Dell boys, isn't it? You know what I'm saying?
That's not how the heart cardiovascular system works. Hannah, please,
If you're referring to the trotter van, then that's actually a not bad analogy.
There you go, fuck off. That's what I'm saying, bro.
How is everyone getting a win on here apart from me?
Listen, yeah, I paid him off.
When you first met Rohan, he was negging you. You decided to invite him onto your podcast. What did you expect?
It's just,
I don't know. But please, explain.
So frogs and some other amphibians have two atria, and one ventricle. And there's only sort of like grooves that separate the ventricles. So you get your sort of oxygen rich blood and oxygen poor blood. But it means that as a whole, the oxygen's quite, sorry, the blood is quite oxygen poor. And frogs are sort of okay with that because they're cold blooded. They don't move around as quickly as warm blooded animals do. And they can also get some oxygen through their skin. So it's not as important for that blood to get the oxygen all over their body. Now, the way that sort of evolved into a four-chambered heart is really interesting, I think, anyway. So turtles are almost like the in-between, where they're starting to get a wall to split off the ventricle. And you find that they've got much more oxygen-rich blood. But then you move to mammals and birds who move very quickly and need really rich oxygen blood. And that's when you develop that solid sort of wall and you get the four-chambered heart.
That is actually super interesting. I love stuff like that.
So Hannah, you weren't here last episode. You were very ill. And you know what we missed the most? Apart from your wonderful personality, it was the optimism brought through Hannah's highlights. What do you have for us this week?
So the first of my highlights today is a wonderful historical and social volcanologist called Jasmine Scarlett. Jasmine looks at sort of the human side of volcanic eruptions. And I think it's really interesting, the work she does. And she's been talking a lot on Twitter about how her sort of family history and culture has been inspiring her science work, which I find very interesting. And you can read about that on her blog, which we will put in the show notes. The second person is someone we've referred to before on the podcast. You might have heard us talking about the book The Good Immigrant, and how Alex and I in particular keep throwing it at people. But Nikesh Shukla is a writer and an editor, and he edited The Good Immigrant, which is a great collection of essays looking at race and immigration in the UK. It's a really wonderful book. I think it's one of the things that me and Alex first bonded over. And I think it's a very important book for everyone to read.
Hannah, who is your final highlight?
I hope you'll forgive me for putting a fictional character as my final highlight.
Oz does it on...
I am a fictional character.
I'm not going to make...
What's the end of that sentence?
I was going to make a Tinder joke, but I'm not.
So I went to see Avengers Infinity War yesterday. And when this character came on screen, I basically squealed out loud because Shuri is an absolute badass. Can we talk about the fact that we now have two blockbuster movies that have a teenage woman of color running all the science and technology in a country?
I mean, I'm not going to put out, I think it's nepotism. Just like a brother is king.
She's like the most intelligent person in the universe.
This is true. She's smarter than Bruce Banner, who has 7 PhDs.
That's the Hulk.
Alter ego is Bruce Banner.
Just in case people don't know the name.
Okay. I thought you were correcting me. I was like,
The Hulk has the PhD.
I'm just keeping in mind that Oz didn't know who Shuri was.
I mean, yeah, and Bruce Banner has 7 PhDs, which isn't actually a point of super intelligence. Once you get past one, it's like, that's a really dumb idea to do anymore. But yeah, no, Shuri is amazing and I think is a wonderful role model for everyone because you get to be cool and talk about memes and do science, which is essentially the USP of this podcast.
Wow, laying
Shuri
it down.
Shuri is our hero.
Bars.
So why are you having a meltdown that I don't know who Shuri is, but you had a meltdown when I didn't know who R2-3PO was?
Stop.
I'm doing that on purpose.
Stop, leave.
No, leave it alone. Leave it alone.
There have been two moments when listening to all the podcasts of the last few months.
Live review.
When I've my heart has sunk. One was the Star Wars, and then what was the other major thing? Some other movie that
you forgot.
It's Lord of the Rings.
Look, yeah, being disappointing to Cambridge men is just part
Why
of my brand.
Cambridge here?
Because you spent a good 5 minutes talking about the correct pluralization of octopus for no fucking reason. So So we have reached the end of the episode. How are you all feeling?
I mean, I feel great, apart from constant corrections from Cambridge crew over here.
I found the stuff about artificial hearts really cool.
So, Hal, what about you?
Genuinely, it was a very interesting discussion. You know, it's quite interesting to learn because, you know, this stuff was going to affect us when we're older. So it's interesting to see that I can fuck up my body now and that later on, you know, I could just get a sweet bionic heart or some shit.
Now, Rohan, two questions. One, is that accurate? And is that a good public health message to send out?
Probably not.
Dude.
And the second question, have you enjoyed being on the podcast?
I have. I'm not sure if you've enjoyed having me here.
But, listen, it's been absolutely incredible. So, as always, guys, thank you so much for joining us. I've been joined by Oz, Hannah, Sahel, and Rohan.
See you later.
Bye.
See you next time.
And I've been Alex Lathridge. This has been Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? Peace.
So you might be thinking, oh my God, how do I hear more about this amazing podcast that combines humor, entertainment, pop culture, and cutting edge science? Or you might be thinking, oh wow, these guys are geniuses and I have questions only they can answer. Or you might be thinking, oh wow, these guys aren't even real doctors and I know way more about science than them and I want them to know this. So how do I let them know this as quickly as possible?
So what you've got to do for us right now is leave us an iTunes review. I know you hear it everywhere, but it's super important because we want that sweet internet validation. Or you can send us your questions or comments by email. It's at whynotadoc@gmail.com. And if you want to stay up to date with what we're doing, you can go by social media. It's at whynotadoc on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Remember, iTunes review, follow us on social media, annoy us by email. Thanks.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.